Thank you, honourable members. Can I just request that the content advisor to just check where is the volume for me, please? Because you want to stand. Whatever that was happening outside the country, the things received, whatever you received, but that was on behalf of South Africa. Thank you very much. We will, because we are, not unless you have got new persons in your team, I think we are familiar with one another. Well, then, if members are comfortable with that we allow the South African Medical Research Council to make this presentation, and so that we are then able to over to you, ma'am.
Mentioned, of course, we do have the new board, but the new board members are not here. The ones that are here are the ones that the committee is aware of. Thanks for the opportunity again. Of course, just to reiterate, of course, we would like to congratulate our president for being on the top 100 of the world most influential people. This is good for South Africa and for the council that we could have somebody that is acknowledged globally for making a difference in her quest of trying to make sure that quality health prevails all the time. And of course, I would imagine that she has been appointed as such, has or nominated and gotten this award, shows that her efforts in transforming the MRC have paid off, and this is really appreciated. We are very proud of having our president. And she still remains humble, that's what is important as well. So then we will go on, so you can see that has been distributed to you. The president,
Madam Chair, could I just ask the speaker to put the microphone close to his mouth, please?
So that being the case, then we will go on, and then as you can see, there will be various categories of the presentation that will take place. It's going to be the strategic environment. Just in brief, saying who are the other new members of the board, the situation analysis and strategic response, and the SAMRC targets that we will speak to. The president will speak to that, and then the budget, as well as the CFO will speak to that. And of course, where do we invest in making the difference? Chair, we do have our structure as accounting authority, and the board has got several committees under that with an executive which acts to speak to things that are really urgent, and we really react and act and become proactive. We've got HR and REMCO, audit and risk, and of course the research and development. Below it is the president with the executive management committee, as you know, and then all the executives that are there, the vice president of research. And I must say at this moment that in the next board meeting, the vice president of research will actually be spoken to. Currently, we have one vice president, and we may restructure to actually have the vice president being alone, not two, with an executive member added to the team. And then we do have the executive for grants, innovation, and program development, the executive for human resource, chief financial officer, and of course the general counsel. All of them are here except the executive for grants and innovation and program development. So going forward, the policies and governance, as you can see, we as this board and the EMC, we are really determined to make a difference in terms of the SAMRC Act, which we, together with the Department of Health, view that it has to change and it has to be modified, but that is led by the department, and then we will, of course, react and then, of course, give input into what is needed. We have appointed the Scientific Advisory Committee to make sure that the science that is happening at the MRC is speaking to the needs of the country, but yet still at the cutting edge as well. And the advisory board is people that are impartial and really having nothing but to see quality research happening, and that is having an impact. And that we are delighted that we have the advisory committee, which is consisting of experienced, diverse people, and really people with passion. The executive management is really looking at the strategic risks that are happening, and we are addressing them with our audit and risk committees, and that is taking place efficiently. And then the management of affairs, as all of us are aware that the SAMRC is indeed one of those that is performing well as per the audit committees and the auditor general's reports. As one has said in the beginning, in terms of transformation, this council chair has done very well in the sense of, for the first time, as one has said, they've taken SAMRC's grants allocation and bursaries to places that has never happened before. Institutions that will be mentioned later on, such as Walter Sisulu, Forte, Limpopo, and so on. And in that situation, have also made sure that there is partnering of institutions that are well developed to those that are also upcoming. And that transformation plan, of course, takes place in various forms as well in terms of the management of the institution, wherein we are diverse and we want to make sure that there is people that are really of color that are represented. Employment equity is ongoing and it's well done, and we, with our HR executive, we are really hitting the targets, and we are striving hard to make sure that where we are short for, we catch up. In terms of succession planning, this is one area that is developing very well. Portfolio committee will be aware that we have mentioned that, for instance, we have introduced the deputy chairs of the unit directors internally, so that we can, as the current directors go on, we have people that are ready and are really of excellent quality as well. This program is really excellent and it's ongoing. And furthermore as well, with our premier president here, she also has taken upon herself to also have specifically excellent black female scientists that she can groom and work with so that they can be ready to take over from her, but also in other institutions of science, not only the MRC. And that program by the president is really excellent, and we think that indeed we wouldn't be surprised to get many places that would be filled by people that have been groomed from the SAMRC, and we are happy about it. We have an excellent plan in terms of the HR strategy for transformation, and indeed, again, you will be seeing the transformation plan that is coming in terms of people that are at the SAMRC. With regards to the committees that I have mentioned, our committees are working well. The audit and risk is ensuring that there's effectiveness, efficiency in terms of financial control, risk control, and the systems of control inside. And the internal audit is taking place very well, and the charter of the audit and risk is forever updated, and that is excellent. We really are delighted that they have enabled us as a result to really get those clean audits from their committees. And the HR and Remuneration Committee has also ensured that all the appointments that are taking place are really complying to equal opportunities, but yet looking at excellence from the people of Ghana. And the R&D has forever then made us to really get all those targets in terms of the publications and the high impact journals to really be there. And again, together with the Scientific Advisory Committee, making sure that our research is relevant. We have a revamped ethics committee chaired by a very able person, and that is also making sure that we can monitor what time and strive to monitor the research that we approve at the SAMRC. And then, of course, the ethics for the animals is something that we also look daily upon, and we're looking at it. So then introducing the board, then we have a total of 16 in the board, myself and then 12 excellent and distinguished scientists. We've got a legal expert, we've got a PFMA expert with us here, and then of course the president being with us, and that's a very capable team. The pictures thereof, the deputy chair that is not familiar to this committee, fortunately her apology, Professor Karisha Abdul Karim, she is the deputy chair from the new board. And the other board members, we do have Professor Bukusi, the only board member that is from out of South Africa, in Kenya, University of Nairobi, Professor Masangwe Prince, Professor Kutim at Stellenbosch, Professor Shaw at UNISA, Professor at the University of Johannesburg, Professor Zungu at UNISA, and then Professor Linda Skull at the University of Limpopo, and then Professor Trisha Nkom, the PSMA person, and Nafisa Kadwa, our advocate, Professor Rachel Chikwamba at CSIR, Professor Tuleni Sodi at the University of Limpopo, Professor Stemiso Belati at WITS, Professor Lungile Kutana at the Mango City University of Technology, and also working with the University of KwaZulu-Natal, and we've got Professor William Ray at the University of Free State. We do have our capable board secretary still with us, Mr. Nizar Davis, and of course our president as the board. And as you can see, the board is diverse, and as we have said, these are capable men and women that are really passionate about the duties and work of the CMRC, and we're looking forward to working successful work with them. The situational analysis, as we should go and look at it, colleagues, I'll introduce some of the things that the president will take over from. So, as we know that we are the custodian of medical research in the country, the excellence really resides here, and then we are thankful to the support that you are giving us. We have prioritized some of the things on both intra and extramural research to maximize our impact. And the funding that is with us here is really based on what had been prioritized, and we have listened to what the committee has said to us we should go and look at, including things like mental health and other areas. We are investing in those, such as, for instance, also working with people and collaborating with people from neighboring countries. That is also taking place and looking at the priorities that we are looking at. And we are, as council, working on transformation, as we are saying, but capable young people that are really, really going to make this country proud in terms of new innovations, as well as coming with therapeutics that are going to be beneficial to us. As you can see, in terms of how people are spending in terms of research, you can see South Africa is really sitting there below one. If you look at the GDP, this is something that we really should and pay attention to. You can see countries that are really making strides, they are actually investing quite a lot relative to us. And of course, if you look at other places such as Mexico, we are of course better than them, but that is just to point at where we are, the global cost, the most expenditure on R&D, and it's something to take point of that really, although with the little that we are doing, we are actually perhaps not doing that, but we can do better, and of course we rely on this committee to actually then realize the discrepancies for us to really catch up with other countries and make input in terms of what should be an appropriate global gross expenditure for R&D. And that we hope that the college will take care of and take note of. And if one, despite that 0.9%, if you look at what is happening in terms of science in Africa, you can see clearly that daily Africa shares 12% of the global population, but only 1% of science. This is something that has to be corrected. And as all of you know, that the people that can offer hope in terms of correcting that is South Africa, and I think we are really doing that well. If you see that between the last 16 years, between 2003 and 2012, health science has driven the research, and there has been 4% annual growth. And that has happened because of health. So which means actually change has happened because of MRC, because we said we are the custodian of excellence in science research. So this is something of importance to know that really Africa is not doing well, but South Africa is doing well, and the major contribution has been on health, and then that health has been driven chiefly from the research that is happening. And that's, this statistic is very significant, and it shows that indeed money is being used to good use in terms of SAMRC. And then again, if one looks at this slide, you see the same picture wherein you've got physical science, engineering, and mathematics contributing the most when you look at other countries. But when you come to South Africa, you can see that science, health scientists are still contributing a significant amount as well. And again, that we are thankful that we are having capable EMC and MRC that is actually making us proud. We are on our way of the burden of disease in South Africa, the quadruple, which is of course the children and the mothers, the HIV and TB, and the violence that is not wanting to go during the accident, because, and the non-communicable diseases. So we still, as MRC, addressing these epidemics. None of them is left behind, and we just want to assure that we are still looking, and our attention is still focused on the quadruple burden of disease in South Africa. And as we have shown this in the previous as well, we have clearly shown that we have contributed to some of the other diseases going down, but we still are worried, of course, that HIV still remains on top, and the other diseases that are there. But as we have said before, we have really made strides, and we can continue to make the strides to go on. And the President will then speak forward on what is the strategic response and what MRC will do going forward.
So Mike painted a very good picture about why science is important. And I think at an international level, we're facing a new dispensation where science is not seen as an important thing. We know that people are questioning global warming, and that the new administration under Trump is leading a very anti-science effort. So we do want to make sure that science continues to be seen as important, and that science contributes to society. So in terms of the next slide, slide 20, how does given what Mike, our chairman, has just said, how do we respond to the global issues and to the local issues? And I think given our small amount of budget, we want to make sure that the amount of money we get for health scientists is spent effectively. And our CFO will show you how committed we are to getting research rands to the researchers and not letting it get lost in administration and in indirect costs. So we want to make sure that we allocate our resources effectively and we use them efficiently in South Africa. So that's our first goal. Our second goal is to make sure that the science that we fund leads to the generation of knowledge, and that we also are committed not just to making science and publishing, but we take the knowledge that we publish and translate that into policy and practices so that we can improve health in South Africa. You can see the slide, the bar graph on the right shows the peer-reviewed articles that we have had from the MRC funding from 2010 to 2016, and you can see that that last year we published around 680 articles that were affiliated to the Medical Research Council. And this is a phenomenal amount of articles for such small amounts of money we get for research. So we're very efficient. And most of these articles were in high impact journals. And the other thing that is important is that most of the first and senior authors were affiliated to the MRC. Very often in Africa, the first and last authors are American or European researchers, and we're very proud that in South Africa, the local researchers are leading the science, and this is very evident from the work that we do. If you go to the next slide, slide 21, you will see that our strategic response for our third goal is to support innovation and technology to improve health. And this was our third new objective that we had, was to try and fund to try and spend money in drugs, devices, and diagnostics that were applicable to South Africa. And we were interested in point-of-care diagnostics, diagnosing TB at through urine or through saliva at the bedside. We were looking at ways of optimizing identification of diabetes in pregnant women and finding and contributing to vaccine development and discovery. And so this is our innovation platform where we hope that we can develop innovative health solutions. Already we've seen some of our innovations that we've funded being used already by the Department of Health. And one of the things that the Department of Health use is our apps, our central drug list app, and some of the apps that help us with stockouts and that's been funded by the MRC. We also have the AmbiFlow, that is that Doppler flow that looks for decreased uterine blood flow during pregnancy. And this is co-funded between the MRC and the CSIR, and we hope to see this rolled out and evaluated in Africa and India in the next couple of years. If you look at our strategic goal 4, that's a very important one, is that we have to continue to invest in science and invest in our young researchers. Because if we don't build the pipeline, we're not going to be able to make science flourish in South Africa. And this slide just shows you the amount of masters and doctoral or PhDs that we're funding. And we made a strategic shift post 2010 to invest in PhDs. Our Minister of Health, noting the lack of clinical research capacity in South Africa, wants 1,000 clinician PhDs in 10 years. And so we committed to help support the Department of Health in developing MD PhDs or health or any health-related person who wants to do a doctorate. And so you can see how we've invested over time to try to get to 100, funding 100 PhDs a year by the MRC. If you go to slide 22, just working on why science is important. So this slide just shows you that we're not making enough doctors in Africa, and that although we have a population of 800 million people, we train only 6,000 medical doctors. And it's the same for the whole continent, 6,000 medical doctors, which is the same as Europe, with a population of 60 million. And so we need to continue to make sure that we train doctors, that doctors we make sure that the pipeline of doctors in South Africa is not hampered in any way, because we need these doctors to help us in healthcare. And you can see that if we don't train doctors, we also don't grow science. And so you can see Africa has a very small amount of scientists. And if we're not growing science, we can never flourish. And so it's very important that even in terms of economic adversity, that we make sure that science flourishes and that we don't curtail science spending in times of tight fiscal demands. If you go to the next slide, this slide shows you we're going to talk about the strategic objectives and our targets for 2015-16 to 2019-20. And I think you're familiar with this. First of all, we wanted to make sure that we have good governance, effective administration, and we're compliant with the government regulations. And we aim to get a clean audit right throughout the strategic area, and I'm happy to say that we are already onto our fourth clean audit at the Medical Research Council, and we hope to continue in this manner. And we not only are we hope do we want to be PFMA compliant and have clean audits, we want to make sure that the money we use goes to science. And so we committed to run a lean and mean MRC and not have any fat, and make sure that the money goes to the scientists. And so we committed to only spending 20% of our budget in administering the science of the country. If you go to slide 26, our second one is again to produce and disseminate scientific findings and knowledge on health. And this is in terms of books, published articles, chapters, both within scientists who we fund in the MRC and in the actionable programs. Our strategic objective 2.2 is the number of journal articles published by MRC grant holders with acknowledgement of support. So it's also very important that not only do we fund the research, but that the scientists who conduct research when they publish the articles clearly say that the article was funded, the grants were made possible, and the science that has been conducted was funded by the MRC. If you go to slide 27, you can see that in terms of the strategic objective how we unpack it further. And not only are we looking for total publication rate, but we're also looking at for high impact journals. And so we want our scientists to publish not only in any journal, but to target the high impact journals. We want our papers to be in Science, the NEJM, Lancet, and journals that have an impact factor of greater than 5. In terms of 2.4, we also want to make sure that our science is the papers that we publish, we have first and last author publications by our scientists. So those are the most important positions in a publication, the first author and the final author. The first author is the person that normally writes the paper and does most of the analysis, but the last author is the senior author who sets the strategic objective. So when we have our last author that's an MRC affiliate, it means we have a science leader. And when we have our first author who's an MRC affiliate, it means we're growing the next generation scientists, the new scientist who's publishing as a independent scientist. So we also mentioned that not only are we interested in publishing in high impact journals and having our scientists lead them, but we also want to make sure that the work that we do gets translates into policy and practice. And so we're very committed to trying to understand how translation works and to make sure that we get the evidence into the public arena and that we change practice at a clinic or hospital level. 2.6 is the number of research grants awarded by MRC. So this is basically to provide funding for the conduct of health research. And so this is the number of funding we do for to drive the innovation and that. In terms of slide 28, you can see our strategic objective 3 was our new one, and this is the innovation one, which is very important. And this is the, as I've mentioned before, looking at new diagnostics, devices, vaccines, and therapeutics. And then the 3.2 is the number that reaches the next stage of development. So we know it takes sometimes 10 years to take a product from discovery to the market. And so what we are measuring is that each scientist who we're funding in terms of drugs, diagnostics, and devices is actually moving to the next level. We don't want them to be stopping and doing experiments only in animals, but then when we're on a clear guideline, that you set your preclinical agenda for 3 years, and then you move into clinical development, you move into early human trials, particularly with drugs like malaria. So we want our scientists to rapidly move their products to market so that we can get it out into South Africa. And then, as I mentioned before, what's very critical if we want our science to flourish is we have to pay attention to the pipeline. And so we're not only committed to making sure we're funding masters, PhDs, and postdocs, but that we're also making sure that we're keeping track of people who are graduating on a yearly level to make sure that we can support people who might fall off and take longer to qualify. We have a very good department that knows each person by their name and which institutions they're at and what are the kind of problems that they face as they progress through their degree. And we know sometimes some of our PhDs, sometimes their supervisors die and then we have to try and find new supervisors. Sometimes they have family circumstances that stop them from being able to progress, and so knowing our masters and PhD and postdocs intimately helps us and makes them flourish in there and makes them know that someone's watching them and someone is supporting them. So if we look at slide 29, this just sets you our annual targets. It's a horrible slide, and we have to find a better way of being able to show you this without, without it being such a small font. But this just tells you the kind of targets we're looking in terms of it. We're in teen audits. Gives you the number of articles that we're looking for and the number of grants and funding and kind of funding for clinical research. So this is just the absolute indicators for the APP. And Siti just summarizes the strategic objective 3 and 4, the number of targets that we're looking for. And you can see that on the whole, MRC is achieving its targets and in some cases is moving further ahead. And I'm happy to take questions specifically around any of the targets in the discussion about some of the variances that you may see. But I'm very proud that the MRC has really worked very well with this. The nice thing about the Auditor General, normally the Auditor General just looks at finances, and in the next couple of years, the Auditor General is going to also apply their mind to our other strategic objectives and give us some kind of qualitative feel about the kind of science we're doing and how we're doing in our other strategic objectives. So that's going to be another way where the Auditor General will report on some of our indicators and not just on the financial ones. I'm going to move to slide 31, and I think this is where Nick's going to come in and talk about the MRC budget. Nick is our CFO.
Thank you. Good afternoon, honourable members. I'll just briefly take you through the numbers. And the first slide, I won't go into a lot of detail because the President's already talked about our fourth clean audit and the reduction in our administration costs. We've managed to keep it below the 20% mark, and it's actually been reduced from around about 27% of total expenditure in 2011-2012. So we are targeting to keep that below the 20% mark into the MTEF period. Moving along, if you look at the main sources of income for the MRC, we have a broad two main categories. One is our baseline funding, which in 2017-18 is $538 million for the new budget year, down from $576 million in 2016-17. And then the balance is mainly made up of contract income, international funders, etc., that also assist us where we do major research projects for them and with them. So we're looking at approximately just under R1 billion worth of revenue over the period, although we are seeing a decline in the 2017-18 in our baseline income. And I'll talk a little bit about that in a slide or two's time. But we have seen a significant increase from 2014-15, where it was running at 391. We've seen an increase to around about the 530, but it, we're projecting it will plateau at that sort of level for the MTEF period. If you look at the main constituents of income that I that mentioned, you can't see the slides as we cut off on the screen a little bit, but I did mention in 2017-18, our baseline budget is $614 million, and then grants and contracts is $337 million, and then we've got various other areas of income, mainly rental, where we actually lease out some of our buildings, interest on the funds that we invest when we receive the monies before they obviously get spent, we earn interest, and then some small other income, which is mainly our recoveries on projects. So that gives us the total in 2017-18 of $987 million. And you look at the average growth rate over the prior 2013-14 to 2016-17, you can see the average growth rate is 11.5% per annum, and I think it's quite quite good in the event that inflation has been running below that. But if you look at the next 3 years, you see we're projecting only a growth rate of 0.4%. So you can see that income is going to be, we're projecting income to be relatively flat over the next 3 years. And this shows the baseline income in a little bit more detail. And you can see that in 2017-18, it reduces from 576 to 538 million. That's a reduction of 7% on 2016-17, and then goes up a little bit by 2% to 548, and then by 6% in 19-20. So effectively, the baseline receipts in 1920, 578, will be at the same level as 2016-17. So no growth being forecast in the baseline allocation for the next 3 years. And that shows the same numbers graphically, and you can see the dip in 2017-18 and the slight recovery thereafter. So obviously we've had to look at the budget in that light. With the income being relatively constrained, we've had to take some decisions in terms of our spending patterns. And as I mentioned, the next 3 years will be a constricted fiscal environment with a baseline allocation decrease in 2017-18. We do have a number of contractual commitments with international funders and our local flagship projects, which we will be able to see out, and we will make use of our cash reserves to fund those projects until the end of the period. We obviously, though, won't be able to embark on any new contractual commitments until our existing ones come to an end in the next 3 years. We'll continue to maintain tight control on support costs and only fund critical new posts from a reduction in vacant posts. So if we add a post, we'll obviously reduce a post in other areas. We'll maintain our cash reserves at a minimum of 50 million, so we will not drop below that, despite the fact that we will be budgeting for an excess of income expenditure over income for the next 3 years. And where we can leverage money, and where we can look at leveraging funding at a rate of 1-to-1 with international funders, we will certainly look to do that if our cash flow does allow for that. This is also a relatively busy slide, but it just shows you the actual expenditure over the period. And you can see that in 2017-18, which is the current budget year, as I mentioned, we are anticipating that we will spend R1 billion on income of 987. So we will have an excess of expenditure over income of 63 million. In 2018-19, we'll have an excess of expenditure over income of 44 million. And then in 1920 we'll be back to a break-even. So that's along the line of strategy of making use of our reserves, our cash reserves, to fund the deficits over the next 3 years. And we do believe that we have sufficient reserves to manage this. And then the last slide from a financial perspective is looking at the breakdown of our spending over the four key objective areas in 2017-18 of R1 billion. You can see that 199 million is going into administration, which is 20%. Core research gets 603 million, which is 55%. Innovation and technology, 190 million, which is 18.8%. And then capacity development, 58 million, which is 5.4%. So that's the actual breakdown across the four key objectives. Thank you.
So we're going on to the next slide, where we're going to just talk a little bit about some of our investments in science, looking for local solutions for global challenges. And the most important thing that we want to highlight is the need to build research capacity. And this slide just shows you the research capacity that we're building within the MRC. So the MRC has an intramural program, it has scientists, and we have around 600 employees, and of those around 40% are involved in science. And this shows you our fiscal spend on study, support for staff at the MRC, and the slide to your right shows this by gender and by race, and you can see that we are committed to transformation in the MRC and to make sure that we grow a pipeline of scientists that are diverse within the MRC. If you go to the next slide, We're also committed to building the research capacity outside the MRC, and particularly in historically disadvantaged institutions. And we have five universities that are involved in this program. And this program looks at building science in many ways. So to build science, you need to make sure that you have a good research and research management capacity. To do this, we first of all train researchers to compete for grants. So everything that there's a meritocracy. So everything that a scientist applies for funding at the MRC is competitive. So we train scientists from HDIs to compete for grants, and these grants that they submit are internationally peer-reviewed. We also then provide pilot grants. So scientists that have competed and that have got good peer review, they get money to do their research. And we then facilitate access to technical services for research. We enhance capacity to manage the support, so we place people at universities to help scientists manage the budgets that they've got. We also help them build capacity to manage grants. You have to be able to conduct research and to be able to be competitive. The money that comes into the university, it must go to the research, and so you need to know and learn how to manage grants. And so by training people to manage grants, it makes them globally competitive. And the aim is to wean people off MRC funding and get them to be globally competitive, to get NIH funding and welcome funding. We also facilitate twinning, both with national and international scientists. And our collaboration with Walter Sisulu, we have a collaboration with Johns Hopkins University and the NIH, who support the local science at Walter Sisulu University. We also are interested in training clinicians to do research, because the clinicians understand the burden of disease in the clinic, and if they know how to do research, they can become competitive. And in this way, we hope that we can really build capacity at historically disadvantaged institutions. This has been a very successful program, and we really have people publishing from this program, so that is successful. Going further about growing our next generation scientists, this shows you in terms of our the clinicians interns that we are funding. You can see this just shows you that the numbers. So it's by clinicians interns and in total, and it shows you the gender breakdown and the race breakdown for all the people that we fund at the Medical Research Council. The one of our most prestigious programs is what we call our National Health Scholarships cohort. These are PhDs that are co-funded by the Department of Health and a public-private partnership from the Public Health Enhancement Fund. And this just shows you by race the cohort over time and how we've changing the demographics as the program matures. The next slide shows you how we've changed who we fund in South Africa. So when I came to the Medical Research Council, I did a review of who was getting grants from the MRC. And you can see before I came to the MRC, the majority of scientists who were getting awarded MRC grants were white. And so we looked at this and tried to understand why this was so. And so we developed a whole lot of strategies, and that was teaching people how to write grants, supporting early career development, creating two tracks for early stage investigators versus mature investigators. Previously at the MRC, an A-rated scientist like me would compete with a person who was just out of university, and of course I would win the grant because I had lots of years of experience. And so we created two tracks, one for early stage investigators and one for mature investigators. And so you can see over time how we increased the diversity of the funding of the MRC. And I think this is, if there's one slide that I'm proud of, is this slide. It shows all of these people who get grants, it's competitive. This is meritocracy. So people who get our grants have international peer review, and we've shown it's possible to change the profile of scientists getting our grants just by teaching people how to write grants and being competitive. And so this is one of my most important slides, I think. In terms of slide 46, this just shows you the breakdown of our grants, innovation, and product development funding, and shows you the commitment of other institutions like the NIH to the funding that we get for grant innovation and product development. If you look at slide 47, this again just shows you the funding stream in terms of our funding for our strategic goal number 3, our strategic health innovation partnerships, which is our SHIP projects in light blue. Other research projects that are strategically funded by Baseline. The MRC and Newton Fund programs are our leverage programs, where we put one rand from the Newton Fund to fund projects and grants. And most of the work we've done here has been in TB implementation science and NCD research. Then we have our big flagship project, and these are both clinical and basic science. And I think some of the most important projects coming out of our flagship is looking at optimal ways of treating multi-drug-resistant TB. And some of the work that we're doing here will set the world agenda on how to manage TB in people who have multi-drug-resistant TB. If you look at the next slide. And then, so what's also very important to show, because this is public funds, and that we're committed to funding in the top 10 causes of mortality in the country, and we want to show you that we there's fidelity, we're faithful to ensure that we fund in a way that's responsible to the health needs of the country. And slide 48 just shows you how appropriately we're funding, and that we address all the burden of disease in South Africa, and this just shows you roughly how the funding is distributed by disease category. So I'm now starting my fourth year out of 5 years of my presidency, and so I also need to look back and see what has worked and what hasn't worked. And I think the one thing that, in terms of review, is that I believe that one needs to lead by example, and that I've encouraged the executive to be active researchers. You can't lead a science council if you're not doing science. And so you don't want a bureaucrat running the organization. You want a scientist who understands the priorities of the science. And so what I have tried to do is remain active as a scientist, and being in touch with science, and continuing to be NRF rated. So, and I encourage all our executives to be scientists, and also to make sure that they are NRF rated. I've also tried to have fidelity to transformation of science leadership within the MRC. And we've created a deputy director program to make sure that we bring in people of colour into leadership positions to take over from people who are retiring. We've also created a postdoc fellowship to develop the early stage investigator, and I'm also formally bringing in the mentoring of senior black female scientists into the office of the president, where I work very closely with mid-career scientists to make sure that they can be the next leaders of science councils, the next deans of medicine, and that we make sure that we do specific mentoring, individual mentoring, and support of people, of mid-career scientists, so that they can become our leaders of the future. We committed to the next generation development of black scientists in the extramural domain. We fund the first time Forte, University of Forte, ever got an extramural unit was under in my term, and we have a water and microbial extramural research unit at the University of Forte who are very productive and they're publishing incredibly well. We committed to meritocracy, so science excellence. We want to make sure that we do high impact science and that our medical science flourishes in South Africa. We also committed to making sure that we're efficient and that whatever we do makes good business sense. We're having our SETI review. It starts now, in next week, next Monday, and we'll have the results by end of June, July. If you remember, the last SETI review we had, it caused a whole restructuring of the MRC. There was a whole restructuring, and so this review will tell us whether the restructuring of the MRC has been successful or not. So I look forward to sharing that review with you once it's done. In terms of the trajectory, so what I'm committed to is a transformed organization that is strategically informed to approach funding according to the burden of disease. And what we do is that we set national strategy. So if we are looking to fund in a certain area like cancer or TB, we bring together both scientists from South Africa, from the region and from other parts of the world, and policymakers and Department of Health to sit together for 2 days and create a strategy for how to fund certain key priority areas. And we've just done that for cancer. So we have a clear blueprint about how to fund cancer in South Africa that everybody's agreed upon, and we are doing this for TB as well. We've done it for HIV and TB and HIV-related malignancies, and I think this is a very good way to set priority, particularly if there's a funding shortage, and you want to make sure that you prioritize the science and get the money to where it needs to go. We're worried about the lack of augmentation of funding, so although we see a stabilizing of funding, we're not seeing an increase in funding, and that needs to grow year on year, and we're worried about that. We believe that we are developing strong scientific leadership at the MRC and in the extramural domain. We are committed to making sure that the science that we fund is translated for maximum impact, and so we have a very good unit called the Cochrane Unit that is trying to understand how to ensure that scientific findings and evidence is taken up in the clinic. We're happy to say that we're developing a steady pipeline of scientists to replenish the pool of scientists that are exiting their career. And what we also need to work on, and we're committed to, is to make sure that civil society sees the value of the Medical Research Council and treasures this resource. And so one of the things we're doing, which I think you saw, is that we don't make science available to communities. And so one of the things that we are going to try and do is to make sure that the community, the taxpayer, understands medical science and what we do, and we're developing a citizen's report that helps people understand the science that we do. We also think it's very important to make sure that science is seen as a priority and not a luxury. We want to make sure that people know that science saves lives, and so we were also fortunate to be involved in the March for Science in South Africa, where we MRC was there, and we had banners that showed that vaccines are important and that science saves lives. And so I'm just going to end again about why it's important. Sometimes when money is short, people think you should cut the science budget, that you don't need science, science is a luxury. And I want to just re-emphasize this, is that if you look at economic wealth and human development, and you look at a whole lot of indicators, the most important thing is science, is that publications is the index closest to GDP per capita. And so if you look at science productivity, it's the best predictor of economic wealth and human development than any other variable. And so I'm appealing to this committee to make sure that we fund science, and we make sure that no matter how poor, how bad budgets are, that we don't curtail the funding of science, because then we curtail it at our own peril. We curtail it at the peril of health and wealth in South Africa. And so I'm just it's my last comment about the budget, and to make sure that we don't lose sight of how important health research is and how important medical science is. So thank you very much for that.
Thank you very much. Members, there's the presentation. Honorable James, Honorable Mashalela, in that order.
Thank you very much for referring to research with South African Medical Research Council. I just would like to draw your attention to...
Sorry, thank you for that. I just would like to draw your attention to slide 19 of the presentation, entitled Leading Causes of Death, and would like to ask, why is the leading causes of death based only on the findings of 1997 and 2012 respectively? We are in 2017 now, which means your report does not have the information of 2013, 14, 15, and 16. The information that is readily available at Statistics South Africa. That could, in actual fact, because we have listened to Statistics South Africa report, which is obviously a different, they have got a different finding altogether as compared to the, and it would have definitely been interesting enough. The research is never static, as you know. It's never static. So my argument is, it could have been very interesting for us to can compare the information as derived from the research of South African Medical Research Council and the statistics department there. And because most of the information reflected here includes the findings from 2015 to 2019, with your preparations, even with the strategic responses by SAMRS, obviously includes the peer-reviewed articles that inclusive of 2016. Because you are research department, my question is, I'm only interested in leading causes of death, because they have got something different altogether that you don't have. They've got amongst the 10 leading causes of death other factors that definitely plays an important role according to their findings, and they are not reflected in your report. Thank you.
Thank you very much, and thank you very much for the presentation. I mean, by any measure, the Medical Research Council is one of South Africa's leading institutions, and all of the performance factors indicate that you've got something right. So you've appointed the best people in the right places to lead an organization that's quite efficient and accountable. And the consequence of that are the figures that you presented. So it's partly congratulations. Also congratulations to Dr. Gray for being nominated one of the 100 most important and influential people in the world. And certainly your ability to leverage global support is a testimony to the wisdom of that award. What is also very clear to me is that to get to the next level will require not an incremental increase in budget, but a significant increase in budget. You can't just have a, you can't reward high performance with simply a normal annual increase. What you must be able to do is take an organization up to the next level. So that's certainly my view, that there's a need for a significant quantum increase in your budget. So I have three areas of interest. The first is to do with the consequences of the Trump proposals for budget cuts for the NIH, the CDC, and perhaps even the disease detection programs in the Pentagon and the Department of Defense. I've been talking very directly with the Appropriations Committee in Congress, and I've seen the individual cuts that they want to propose, about 102, not only in the long-term budget, but in this year's budget. Now, I don't think you'll get it. There's enough people within Congress who will simply oppose what is a short-sighted, perverse set of proposals, because what essentially what he's doing is cutting out all the global health elements. So as you know, in the NIH, it's a $7 billion cut of a $32 billion budget, including the complete elimination of the Fogarty grants. So the question is, though, in terms of my observations, that he will not get what he wants, but he will do damage along the way. And your slide just showing all of your NIH collaborations indicate that you will be very vulnerable. So the question is, how are you going to manage this risk? So that's my first question. My second question is around innovations. And as I'm sure you've discovered, sort of public purpose innovations in discovery science is a very difficult thing. You can't tell a scientist, find this. They happen to find it because they're doing some discovery research, because they have the time and the money and they've got all the postgraduate students to, you know, work on the problem. So public purpose innovation is very difficult, and when you get it right, it's actually fabulous. And clearly with our disease burden, there's public purpose innovation required both for infectious diseases and for non-infectious diseases, for non-communicable diseases. And you've got some examples. Can you tell me what your strategy is here? Because we're using taxpayers' money to develop an innovation, and I think it's right. But clearly you need private sector partners. So what is? How do you do it? Do you have a system in terms of the chain, in terms of getting the IP right, getting the patents down and registered, and then finding private sector collaborators to actually just scale it up in terms of distribution? But just tell me what your strategy is against our disease burden, because that's what the response ought to be. And my third question is, could you just comment on how we tackle diabetes in this country? I mean, it's one of those diseases where there's a genetic component that is distributed unevenly in the population, and there's obviously a lifestyle component in terms of diet and a whole range of other things. So when you do work on this area, are you investing in understanding the genomics of this? And so what is that? And who's working on those questions? And are you investing also on the lifestyle side? That is about people's diets and lifestyle habits. Thank you very much.
Thank you, Honorable Mashele.
No, thanks. Let me also welcome the presentation and also add the voice of Honorable James to congratulate the President. just to take from what Dr. Tembua has raised around the leading causes diseases, taking into consideration that one of your issues is to ensure that there's proper research, development, and innovation in relation to the leading causes of diseases. And taking into consideration that your leading causes of diseases are as far back as 2002, are you not behind? Are you not making research and innovation on issues that are no more the main issue? Because your information is as 2002. That's why maybe there's a huge difference between what you have as leading causes of diseases vis-a-vis what stats as the is their leading causes of diseases, because theirs is as of 2015, which means it's more recent than yours. And therefore, there's a huge, there's that difference. And therefore, does it not you put you behind in terms of your research and innovation and ended up chasing things that are no more chaseable, or we've already passed in terms of making sure that we address the immediate challenges that are confronted by society or the country as a whole? Just want to get that clarity around this area. Well, I will agree with you, President, that the issue of budget is a worrying factor. Because when I look at it in terms of the MTF, the budget for MRC is shrinking, and it's a very worrying factor. And the main part that is shrinking is your research, your innovation, and it's very disturbing. So it's a matter that we'll have to see how best we manage it. But how do you link that with science and technology, which also does research and innovation? Are we observing the same trend, or is only on the medical research that is within yourself as MRC where this trend is developing? I'm raising this because in one of the proposals from the ruling party is that we need to increase a budget for research and innovation. But this one, it's the opposite of that proposal going forward. And it's a matter that I'm not sure whether there's any link between yourself and science and technology. Maybe when they say, no, there must be an increase in research innovation, and they mean in the Department of Science and Technology. And then we are not taking into consideration. I'm not sure what is the relationship, because I would have thought that it should be a relationship that exists between yourself and the Department of Science and Technology, because it does research innovation as well. And then the comparison of the budget for research and innovation while it is good to compare with the developed world, it will have been nice to also compare with the developing world, so that we are able to match ourselves with our own counterpart. And then we then compare what the developed world is, where are the developing world, and where are we in relation to that, so that we're able to then make a comparison that informs us how far behind we are in relation to this matter. But if we compare ourselves with Sweden, you see, we'll be comparing the impossible. We'll be comparing with the impossible. You see, now I see there is Mexico, but it's not a dominant one. But the dominant one is the dominant one. Because not in the same level with all the BRICS countries. We're not to the same level in terms of development with China, for example. We're not in the same development, for example, with India or with Russia, for that matter. And therefore, I would have preferred a situation where Because we must avoid the situation where we look too European, South Africans, who are in the continent of Africa, who are Africans. And therefore, to be too European for me, it's a problem. I would have loved where we become closer to where we are. And then begin, therefore, to then relate to where we are, and then before we go to the international world, so that we are able to know as how do we compare ourselves to ourselves, that is, as Africans. And then from there, you then move to the global arena, and then you'll be able then to compare to see how far behind we are in relation to that. And then on the same issue, this where you are comparing the regions in the continent, and then you then lift ourselves as South Africa compared to the regions. What must we read out of this slide? Because it's a region and it's a country. East Africa as a region. South Africa is just a country. Southern Africa, I'm not sure whether we're included in that Southern Africa. That's a region. And you are comparing with a country. And then West Africa, the same thing. At least then there is Malaysia and Vietnam where you are also comparing. So I just want to understand what must we read out of this, so that at least we've got a better understanding of this analysis that we're presenting. And then coming to the, I'm not going to now to go to the presentation itself, I'll go to the book that we've tabled, that is the ATP document itself. I just want to, from a human resource perspective in terms of transformation agenda, I just want to get a feeling whether you've set yourself a time frame. Because I was reading, I don't get that there is a time frame, because of, if you look at senior management, your institutions it still doesn't reflect the demography of South Africa. And as I'm saying, I don't see the extent to which there is a timeline in which you have a target that you have set to yourself that by this time you want to change the situation around so that MRC represent the proper demographic environment of South Africa. Because I was looking at how it is reflected, it is still very, very much skewed. Very, very much skewed. Because when I was looking at your page 13 there in that document, senior management, for example, we have got only 7 out of 50 Africans. It's very, very much skewed. And then you go to professionally qualified and specialized. We've got only 42 out of 148. Well, it's not a, well, in your book it's 154, but when I add, I only get 154. I don't get the total 248. It makes, in fact, all the totals when I was adding, they didn't match at all. Except the first two. The rest, when I was adding, the total didn't tally. But the gist of the story that I'm raising is that in all the categories that are at the highest level, you still have very skewed representation. And I don't see, when I was reading your transformation approach, where you are setting targets to say by this time you want to be at this level in terms of changing this demographic representation in a long term. That's one. And then the other thing, there's this issue around review of the, I remember we discussed it, it was last of last year. We had a very extensive discussion around this area of the review of the current act that governs the MRC. And we are still raising the same matter. You don't tell us when are you going to be finally reviewing and tabling a new or an amended version that begins to address some of the weaknesses that you have identified in the current act. Where exactly lies the problem? Is it a problem with the department? Who is supposed to do the work? Is it yourself or is the department? I'm glad because the place here, my doctor is here, maybe you will clarify that matter as well, because he's responsible for the management and support of the entities. So that we understand where exactly is the problem, and if this act inhibits some of your work and you continue to operate in that fashion, it might be some of the reason why, even in terms of the budgetary point of view, you are unable to have the maximum budget that you might require, because in the manner, maybe the manner in which the act allows you to operate. So the sooner maybe we are able to attend to this matter, for me, the better, to say the least, Chair. Yeah, for now I'll end there, Chair. Thanks.
Congratulations to the Prof and to your team. Well done. Hope that gives you more grease to your elbows. Thank you. There is a lot of problems that maybe you would like to raise up here. I thought the reason why people do research is to find a solution. It's not just to explain and get things done and say, oh, this is the cause, and so on and so on. The causative part of it, fine, is easy to find because there are leads, but what you do with that is to find a solution, I think. And I don't think that could be overemphasized, that the reason why people do research is to find solution. And we all know that the biggest driver of ill health is poverty. All these other things follow on. I can see that you have a list of causes of death, blah, 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 blah. But you see, if you get a child who's nutritionally challenged from childhood, he becomes a dunderhead, right? It's a designer dunderhead. And there is no cure for that yet. Okay? So maybe you will research that one and find out how to cure that after the child's cognitive capacity has been damaged irrevocably. And then it becomes a problem to the state and to everybody. But we were there when these things were happening, and we rushed to check other things which we couldn't, which put us somewhere. But the real thing that is a killer, and that is actually even makes, that is horrible, it's not been researched thoroughly. So maybe in your good books, you can think about maybe throwing one or two people to research the effect of malnutrition on the health system in the country. I haven't seen anything about malnutrition killing children, but I've seen dead children who were killed by malnutrition in South Africa in this age and era. It's a crime to have children dying of malnutrition. But maybe they are not interesting cases. They are interesting. It's just statistics. It's hosted South Africa. They just write so many children died, and mother and child, blah, blah, blah. Those are, you know, headline-making type of things that people latch onto. So maybe, if we can just check and see how economically we can help to stem this silent plague that is actually horrendous. Maybe it will be worth more than all the other researches put together, because once you solve that one, the other ones follow, isn't it? Or at least they are no more a problem, as problematic as they are now. No, because prevention is better than cure. So if we start by strengthening the preventative part and finding the root causes of that, by the time we get somewhere up there, we will have nothing to research because we'll have found a solution. No? Maybe that's the best way to do things. The rest I don't need to get into. The others will get into that. Thank you.
Thank you very much, Chair and Prof. This is the second year that we raised the issue of research being done in the continent. And funded, I think I'm among those who are now. I'm raising this because the science, in whatever form, health science, has really got a potential of changing social conditions of our people. Now, my only concern is that, and I want to accuse you of that, I'm saying accusing you of that, because science has always been portrayed to be a domain of white people, males, and rich. In this area, I will, pardon me, I'm not going to be diplomatic at all, because it's when I was in science and technology, when they were launching TIA. They launched TIA in Summer Street in Port Elizabeth. The whole room was full of scientists, old, male, rich. And I challenged them. I said, in the first place, why does the Department of Science and Technology launching TIA in Summer Street? Summer Street is, if you know PE, you know where Summer Street is. I challenged them. I said, I'm standing here, and I'm not apologetic of not being a scientist, although I was told in some other quarters that being a health worker, how do you separate? And I'm challenging you, why is this institution here? Each and every one of you must adopt a child in Soweto, not Soweto as in Johannesburg, Soweto as an area in PE, in farms, urban areas, adopt a child. Because if we don't do that, we will always have a project of science or a flyer of science only for those that. I'm raising that because this is only for me, Dr. James, and anybody who's staying in Sentin or in Platypus. There are those that are in the rural areas whom it is the responsibility of all scientists to make sure that that young woman who is making beadwork, I'm just making an example about that. So I'm trying to make an emphasis on what Honorable Masilela raised. And I want to link that with page 16 of your APP. And you will correct me. Page 16 of your APP, 3.2, Economic Competitiveness Support Package, Leverage Funding Agreements. They are, it's what, UK MRC, you go to the next page, it's Gates Foundation. I am not finding, I think what Honorable James raised, I'm not finding any funding. They're not reflecting on what then becomes the role of the South African private sector. Not only South African neighbors in the continent. We will raise this because some of the issues, we do think that we will miss them if we don't make an emphasis on this. So that's why I'm saying it is the second year since we met 2014. Now, you again say, which I'm a bit, I'm just going to pick up one bulletproof, second bulletproof in this, under this 3.2. That says that this agreement is for 3 years in ending in 20 with possibility of an extension. In all, so are you, if you say then these international companies, you that's why my concern is, and you feel free to then say I'm reading it with a little bit of a confusion. So if there are extensions, it means you're going to be dependent on them. Whereas there are countries, there are businesses, there's private sector, huge private sector in this country that then think that can then be able to access. For me, when I read this, I then felt that no. What is it that you are not telling us? Is it difficult to conduct the research in Africa? Starting here in the SADC region, is it that difficult? Are we asking too much? And I don't think we're asking too much. It's because we think that as Africa, we must gradually be on our own in whatever field. If then we are going to produce scientists, it must be scientists that we are going to produce with the funds from ourselves as Africa, because if we are then going to get funding from outside, obviously there are terms and conditions, which maybe those terms and conditions may not be palatable or may not assist an African child. The last one is, that's why I'm saying this, maybe as time goes on, this citizen's report, you will ensure that an ordinary child, we have got science centers in the deep rural areas of Tsofimva, which when they get these reports, those parents, they must then be able to understand what their children and the communities are getting from. I'm saying, I'm just putting a blanket. I know you are focusing, you're here focusing on health side. That I'm aware of, but I don't want to separate. I don't want to take that risk of separating it. The last comment from myself is, I struggled, maybe my visual, my eyes, even with my spectacles, some of your slides were, I don't know with the other members, I found it very difficult to go through them. They are very faint and bland. In moving forward, in future, can we try and improve on that so that we don't really strain our eyes? Otherwise, thank you very much. We will we are going to, we'll await your response. Those are the key issues that I thought is very, very important that we some of the areas have been addressed by ordinary members. I will then hand up. Before that, there's one member who wants to ask a question so that we take the whole package. Honorable Ndaba.
Thank you very much, Chairperson. Chair, firstly, I wanted to comment about the font that they have used, because I've been struggling to read some parts of this report. I used all my four eyes, tried the reading glasses, and I tried my spectacles, but I couldn't read. So I want to appeal to them that they must increase the font so for the benefit of us, because sometimes if you can't read the document, it becomes very difficult for you to contribute. But as Chair, I was tempted by the question that was raised by Dr. Maisela regarding malnutrition. I wanted to ask the Medical Research Council, why can't they use Paragonas Hospital as a point of research? Because I think in the olden days, they used to do most of their research in Barra. So I think, Chair, that's important, because Paragonas is one of our institutions which they can get most of the babies there and test them in terms of what are the causal factors of malnutrition. I think my Dr. Maisela even elaborated that, you know, sometimes if they even during pregnancy when you don't eat the correct diet, and even after birth when the child is not given proper food, that can lead to a child not being it affects the intelligence of the child or the development of the brain of the child. So I think if they can use Barra when doing research, that can be also helpful. Yeah.
Thank you, Honorable Ndaba. Chair and Prof, I think how you are going to respond, we are not going to be prescriptive. Otherwise, those are the group of questions that you've been. Thank you.
I'll tackle them first, and then I'll ask my very competent team to add stuff. So the first thing is about the burden of disease and the data that I presented. So I presented data on the second National Burden of Disease study, which we presented here, I think it was about 8 weeks ago, and where we looked quite thoroughly at burden of disease. So I want to just re-emphasize that the Medical Research Council works hand in glove with StatsSA, and that and work to try and appropriate the correct burden of disease on death. So some of the stuff is around TB, and so what happens is so the MRC works with StatsSA. So we get the data, the same data from StatsSA as StatsSA uses. And then we interrogate the information from the death certificates, and we try and appropriate and more specifically the exact cause of death. And so some of the differences is around the burden of death with TB is one of the issues, and how one reports primary and secondary causes of death. And so someone might put pneumonia as the first cause of death, and the second cause of death is actually HIV, and how do you decide how to do that? And so we take all the data from StatsSA, and we try and articulate the cause of death given the primary and secondary cause of death. So our team work very well with StatsSA and to try and attribute it. So we do work with StatsSA and we use their data, but we interrogate primary and secondary causes of disease, and that takes time, and so there is always a lag period. There's also the global burden of disease, which the University of Washington, there are three sources of death that one uses. One uses StatsSA, from StatsSA we use the burden of disease, but there's also the global burden of disease that has a completely different attributes the number of deaths due to HIV to be different. And so we have to take all that data and resynthesize it. So the Ivan of Disease people, there's been lots of occasion where the MRC and StatsSA have looked at the reports and have differed. And I'll go back to the time when we had AIDS denialism, where StatsSA said there was no death, no one was, you know, there was no attributable death due to HIV. And based on the work that the burden of disease did, demonstrated that the burden of disease had changed. Anyway, so there is issues that we need to look at. So when we get the data from StatsSA, we then go back and try and with more certainty ascribe the pattern of death and what they're dying from. So there can be some confusion with classification, and we work very carefully with them. And the biggest misclassification is around pneumonia, TB, and HIV. So someone might die of pneumonia, but they have HIV, or they might die of TB and they have HIV. And so sometimes StatsSA will attribute it to TB, and when we look at the secondary cause of death, we see that it's HIV. And so then we have a slightly different way. There is delay because we spend a lot of time looking at the birth certificates and death certificates and trying to attribute it. The good news is that we also just have finished a demographic health survey with StatsSA. So we work closely with StatsSA. Our demographic health survey, which will be announced soon, will show again better analysis of morbidity and mortality in the country. So it is vexing. Causes of death, we do have to spend time to attribute it correctly and get the right cause of death for the person. And sometimes it can be complex. I think we showed that at our previous parliamentary meeting that we had. In terms of the significance increase, the issue around budget, I agree that to take the MRC to a higher level, we do need increased funding. And that also remains a big concern, particularly if you're not increasing with at least with CPI. We are worried about the Trump administration and about the anti-science at the NIH level, we certainly are worried. But the good news is that there are Republicans who also are committed to science. And so although we are seeing a budget cut, we do need to make sure that some issues are protected. We do need to ensure that the Trump administration understands that global health also affects Americans, and so you can't just divorce yourself from the rest of the world. And the demise of the Fogarty program is a problem. I myself was a Fogarty fellow, and some of the great leaders of science in South Africa, Croatia, Slim Karim, we're also Fogarty fellows. So we have to worry. But what it means, we have to diversify our funding and look for other partners. And we also have to say that our country also needs to take responsibility and invest in science, and we shouldn't be relying on external partners. We should have the same kind of funding ourselves to drive our own agenda. So I think that's an important thing. But we do need to watch the budget cuts, and it does concern us. And so we are looking at diversifying our portfolio. And we have done that in the last 5 years. That we have expanded our opportunities as the UK MRC to the Newton Fund, with Swiss Forte, and through other medical research councils at a global level. In terms of innovation, some of it is serendipity, and some of it is just strategic. And so when we look at our innovation portfolio, our innovation portfolio is on the 10 most common causes of mortality, and we fund malaria drug discovery. And we funded the first in man clinical compound, and we funded the backup partner as well. We also work with CSR to look at nanotechnology to use for malaria drugs to minimize API. For TB, we look at diagnostics, drugs, and vaccine, and we fund in that area. So we're very interested in finding a point of care TB diagnostic. We're very interested in finding new drugs. So we fund Kilage Bodies Unit, that's one of the biggest TB drug discovery programs at a global level. And we also fund, in terms of vaccine science, we're looking at biomarkers of protection so we can develop a rational vaccine design. We also fund, in terms of non-communicable diseases. So we're looking we work a lot in indigenous knowledge systems, looking for drugs for diabetes. And so we're working on that. We have a patent program, and maybe Booker can talk a little bit about our intellectual property issues. Public-private partnerships we've committed to. We have a global health innovation accelerator where we work with public-private partnerships to take stuff to market. And so we do have a whole program that looks at commercialization. And so we do like to think it's quite strategic, the innovation. We don't get a lot of money for innovation, and we have to make sure that all that money works. We fund the Ebola diagnostics, so we're looking for point of care for Ebola, and we've also funded the molecular epidemiology of Ebola, so we can help design better drugs and diagnostics, and we're working with NICD on that. In terms of diabetes, it's complex, so we fund everything from basic research to translation and to clinical management of it. There is a genetic component, and so we've just awarded a program that's looking at the epigenetics of diabetes in South Africa. And we work across the country with that and with international scientists. Diet is very important, and we're working looking at a herbal discovery that it looks quite promising in vivid monkeys. And so we're looking to see whether we can accelerate that into humans. Non-communicable diseases, in terms of precision medicine, I think you saw last week we signed an agreement, a collaboration with China for the Beijing genome project, and we're also looking at precision medicine. We've just had a call for precision medicine in South Africa, so we're very much aware, and we're very focused on making sure that we look at precision medicine both for infectious and non-infectious diseases, both for TB and for things like diabetes. We work well with the Newton Fund on NCDs. And we also look at cancer, so we're also developing a whole cancer genetic analysis for cancer to help us understand cancer in Africa. Lifestyle in non-communicable diseases is also very important, so we also spend money looking at the interface between exercise and diet and how that can affect non-communicable diseases. We spoke again about the leading causes of disease, and just again to reiterate and reassure that we only use the death certificates from StatsSA. So the stuff that we report come directly from StatsSA and their certificates. So that we're not getting a different source. We all agree on the same common cause of it. And we spend time, so we may be a few years behind, but we like to we need to make sure that when we call an HIV death, we call an HIV death, and we have confirmation of it, and we don't misclassify it as a TB or a pneumonia death. And that's very important for us to know exactly when you have comorbidities, that we know exactly what people are dying from. Sometimes people might put on the death certificate heart attack, and then when you look at the secondary cause of it, it's HIV or it's pneumonia or something. So we do need to make sure that we articulate what people are dying from in an accurate way. In terms of our budgets, we do have a link to science and technology. We do get money from science and technology. We work very closely with the Department of Science and Technology in the bioeconomic strategy for health. We work with the National Research Foundation as well. I'm on the National Council for Innovation, and we work closely with the directorate to make sure we're addressing the issues around science and technology. So I do think we have a good relationship. I wouldn't mind more budget from them. They do give us a nice budget, and I'm always happy to take increases from them. So we work well with them, and I think we are good. I think they like the way we work. In terms of the issue of the question on the global expenditure on R&D versus GDP. We did put BRICS in there. We're working with NEPAD. There's an R&D. The AU has started an R&D analysis, and so we're working with the AU's R&D program to try and understand exactly what the expenditure of R&D is in Africa. And so at this moment, it is unclear. And so hopefully, in about a year's time, we will have a better idea of what the other countries in Africa are spending on R&D. Certainly there are areas, countries that are flourishing. Zimbabwe's pharmacology R&D business is flourishing. Tanzania has just started a whole vaccine program. Ethiopia has just got a huge investment to develop some pharma-related stuff. So we're trying to get the exact figures through this R&D collaboration with the AU to try and understand R&D in Africa. So that is, hopefully it will emerge. I mean, the point why Malaysia is there is that 10 years ago, Malaysia had the same GDP as South Africa, and they made some strategic decisions to invest in science and technology, and the same with Korea, which has paid off. And I think maybe that's a lesson about development, is some of the strategic decisions some of the countries made certainly have paid off in terms of improving GDP. Obviously, this is just R&D. So obviously, Israel, a lot of it is probably military. So this is total R&D spend. And so when you see the huge investment that Israel has made, I would guess most of that is not health. Certainly, it's probably military and things like that. But it's an important thing, and hopefully we can, with our relationship with we will have an R&D, we'll be able to more approximate what's happening in Africa. The timeframe for transformation is aggressive. You know, I have 5 years left, so you ask me, you know, when is it all going to happen? I've got 2 years left, you know, and so my five-year term has, you know, so we're already 3 years in. Already we've seen, you know, when I came in, most of the unit directors were white. We now have of the 12 programs. We now have four unit directors that are non-white now, and all our deputy directors, with the aim of taking over the units from them, we've appointed them in the last year, and the idea is that they will replace the unit directors, and so that's our diversity in terms of the senior management. In terms of our CFO, we have a plan. You know, he finishes his five-year term in July, and we will extend his contract with a proviso that we bring in a black CFO that will be his deputy director, and that will transition off to him. The reorganization of our organogram is to take into account the issue of transformation. So we've looked at science and the organogram, and you will see that when we come back again with our in next year, or maybe early at the end of this year, you'll see that our organogram will change, and that will also address the issue of transformation at a senior level. And so in 5 years, when I'm out of here, you'll see that this is an aggressive transformation, and we're committed to it. And you know, we've seen huge changes already in the MRC and in the extramural domain, and we continue. So it's 5 years, and we 3 years into it, we've got 2 years left, and I promise you the MRC will be a different organization in 2 years' time. In terms of the review of the MRC Act, that is the Department of Health's responsibility, but we work very closely with them. The DG says that there's a whole list of acts that they are transforming or changing or modernizing, and you know, we're on the list, and they, maybe NDIH can, maybe Anban can talk about that, but we definitely we are in communication with the DG. They are committed to it, but I guess there's also an issue about just how many hands you've got on deck and how much you can do, but certainly it is an issue with the NDIH, and they maybe Anban and Booker can respond, but we are talking to them regularly about it. We have a plan, we have a communication plan, a whole agenda for that, so we are working closely with them. We have stakeholder engagement and all of that. In terms of the poverty, you know, you're right. Like I said, people are not statistics, and when anyone dies in South Africa, it's a tragedy, you know, whether it's a woman or a child or anyone, and so I hope it never ever looks like we treat people as statistics, because they're not. As a doctor, you know, I don't see people as statistics. And the issue of poverty is complex, and it's intergenerational. the issue of malnourished children. So we've got a couple of strategies that we've looked at, and you know, that's going to take, it's an intergenerational problem. So we've just done this demographic health survey, which we are busy analysing the data, and we'll hopefully present it soon. And what we're seeing is disappointing, is that we still have a huge amount of stunted children in South Africa, and it's a great pity to see that that. You know, I was very disappointed to see that in 2017 we've got stunted children in South Africa. And so that's something that's important. It's our first demographic health survey we've done since 2002, so you can compare how well we've done from 2002 to 2017. And so because it's an intergenerational issue, we've looked at other ways of trying to address it and looking at the neurodevelopmental issues and impact of stunting on neurocognitive development. And so we have this study that we're doing. It's a 5-country study, at Baragwanath Hospital. So the study is in China, India, Soweto, Canada, and Brazil. And we're designing interventions, preconception, and in pregnancy to try and address the issue of neurocognitive and developmental delay. And so that is an ongoing study. But I mean, I'll remind you again, I think I've brought up the famine study. Remember in the Second World War in Holland, there was a huge famine, and all pregnant women that gave birth in 1942 in that year have been followed up for generations. And that famine effect has affected those that family for generations, so they have stunting, non-communicable disease, more suicide, more depression, and so we do know that famine and acute stress in pregnancy has epigenetic changes that affect you for generations, and we need to address that. So just about that in Soweto, we do actually have an extramural unit based in Soweto. It's called the Development Pathways Unit, and it's really addressed. It's for children, neurodevelopment children. Children are followed up from pregnancy throughout their lives. We follow up their offspring. We have the birth to city study now, where we're looking at the offspring of the kids that were initially enrolled in the study, and then their offspring, so we can try and understand some of these intergenerational things. And so we are committed to looking at how to solve these issues. You know, what do we do in pregnancy? What do we do in preconception? How do we change the trajectory of stunting in this country? And what do we need to do with that? That's really important. So it goes back to the social determinants of health. And so we have our units in the MRC address some of the social determinants of health, and that is gender and health. Looking at intimate partner violence and the effects of intimate partner violence on health outcomes. We also have the alcohol and drug and tobacco research unit that looks at addiction and the burden of alcoholism and drug addiction in our country. We have an intramural unit called Violence, Peace and Injury that looks at not only road accidents but at issues of violence in communities and peace initiatives. And we're going to be developing a strategy to do research in violence and peace. We fund work in the mortuaries to try and see what people are dying of, and how much of it is how much of it is interpersonal violence. So we are looking at those. The burden of disease also looks at determinants of health, and our programs on maternal and child health also trying to address some of the determinants of health. I want to reiterate, and I agree with you, Chair, that science should not be seen to belong to be the purview of the privileged. You know, it's because we are poor we need to do science. And so I do want to make sure that we don't think that science is for the privileged people in South Africa. You know, science is critical for everybody, and it's not just for white men. And we need to make sure that people are not intimidated by science and are encouraged to study science. In terms of leverage and the whole question about the private sector, so we work closely with the private sector because obviously they're going to be our partners when we commercialise drugs. So the public money funds all the risk and all the development, and obviously then you have public-private partnerships to take it to commercialisation. So it's not our job to commercialise. It's our job to find public-private partnerships to commercialise. And we do work with a lot of, we work with BioVac, and we work with a lot of other programs to try and make sure that the products are commercialised. We do leverage money from the Newton Fund, from the UK MRC and the Gates, and the question is what about our neighbouring countries? And so we do some of our leverage programs with the Newton Fund. We have to find a way of trying to show what we do. We never see what we do in these annual reports. It's a pity. But we do work, and some of our Newton Fund actually works across the borders, and we're working with Zimbabwe on cancer, and we're also working with Sudan, Ghana, Nigeria, developing ways to work together and fund things together. So we do try, wherever there's a bilateral in Africa, we exploit that bilateral to make sure that we're connecting with the health scientists in that country. We bring the countries together. We've brought Senegal, we've brought Sudan, Nigeria's coming, and we work together to see how we can, Zimbabwe, to see how we can do science together. Health science. So we do work with them, and we need to reflect that, I think, better in our report. And we don't want to be dependent on Gates, on the NIH. The South African voice is important, and it must be our scientific agenda. And we have turned down projects, we have turned down programs where we think that the voice of the South African science is not being heard. And so we do feel that we punch above our weight class, and as South Africans, and we ensure that no one, and particularly when we're using MRC funding, is that there's equality in the partnership, and we're not just data, you know, we're not just data capturers for the developed world, and so that's important. So again, you know, we have this global health. Accelerator that it helps us, you know, with MRC as a partner, we try and accelerate innovation so we can commercialize it. And we do work with the private sector in South Africa when we have products that can be commercialized. In terms of conducting research in Africa, we're committed. So we work with whoever we can work with to develop a bilateral program that supports both South African scientists and scientists in Africa, and maybe we can make a chapter next time to try and make sure we address the kind of questions that are coming out, but we haven't it hasn't come out there. I agree with you. This is terrible. The font, and we have to find it. And that's what I was telling my team. We've got to find a better way of showing this stuff, because even I need a binocular sometimes to read this. So I do agree that we need to find a way of making these. We need to study other people's reports and find a way of presenting our data in a more efficient way. The citizen report, it's the first one, and we'll have a look and see what people feel about it. I still think it is too technical. And I still don't think we're selling ourselves properly, and we need to work on that. And my communication team needs to hear what everybody's saying and build on that. I agree that the stars are difficult to read, because even I had difficulty reading them. I had to read from here, because I couldn't see. So I agree with you on that. The malnutrition, I agree. We have a developmental, we have an extra unit at Barrack Warner Hospital. They're involved in all our studies on research, and I do hope that we'll have the opportunity to present the demographic health survey to the parliamentary committee when it's finished. There's a lot of depressing things when you read it, and that we have work to do. Certainly, when you see that there's some nice things, I think anemia, when you look at anemia, anemia has improved over time, but definitely stunting remains a problem. Stunting starts at 6 months, and we just never seem to catch up. So at the time of weaning, we just never seem to catch up with these babies, and you'll see that in the DHS when we can present it to you. But the good thing is that the anemia has gone down, but stunting and stunting is still a problem. You know, malnutrition is less so, but stunting is definitely a problem. And stunting is important because that affects the neurocognitive ability. It affects our ability to be, you know, sports people, you know, soccer players, all that kind of thing. You know, we need big people to play soccer. And so we do need to address those kind of things in a more sustainable way. And hopefully the program that we do see in Soweto can help us understand the intergenerational challenges that we face with health and how to change the trajectory of people that have been assaulted by malnutrition during pregnancy. I think if there's anything else that I've missed out, we can...
So indeed, colleagues, I think the President has really addressed a lot of things, but just again, Dr. Maisel, Honorable Dr. Maisel, by your chair, to add, I mean, the national survey really included a whole lot of things. It's happening at the schools, and it's done by the MRC to look at the WEMS as well and look at what the WEMS can do in terms of malnutrition, because there has been a directive course in terms of what can happen to the cognitive development. Yes, it's not sufficient, but also we are partnering with the Human Research Council in some of the developmental things in terms of malnutrition, but it is on our radar, and we will try to get the things that are really corrective measures. Just to also add on the issue of transformation, Chair, I mean, we at the board as well, we are committed, and we have spoken to the President and the EMC that there isn't any appointment that is new that is going to come that will actually be of, you know, exclude people of color unless there's a very, very extraordinary reason. But so far, all the appointments that have been there, we have made sure that they will not go the other way, and it will be on merit as well as, you know, changing what was the previous picture. And to that effect, as well, the MRC is no longer staying only in office. They go all out to the places and to try and find out people that are actually deserving of getting positions into the MRC, even at the professional level. The Office of the President, they are recruiting people from various institutions. We have had, for an example, a problem with institutions sometimes sending research projects that perhaps could be from wide, and we have again appealed that we may not necessarily consider those projects and the PIs if they are from the so-called white people only. So we really are really serious about that, and some of the conditions that we have set out in terms of renewing the units includes the fact that people have to show us what have they done in terms of transformation before we can renew the lifespan of those units. If they don't show the transformation, we really don't necessarily have to approve those units. So it's not only the science that we're looking at that we think it will help in terms of addressing the issue of having the kind of people that we want that will reflect the demographics of our country. And indeed, we think that the private sector in the country is not necessarily come up as we want us to do. But for instance, we have tried our best, such as partnering with Anglo-American Platinum, who have started, and they are coming on board. They are working with us and putting up money. And as people look, read the Citizens, for instance, report, we intend to also send it to other places of the private sector and the work that comes, because we believe a lot of mining companies can benefit from the work that is being done, and that would help in terms of leveraging the money that might come short from the NIH as well as from international places.
Sorry, to share my mic, so awesome. Thank you. Thank you, honourable members. In terms of amendments to the Act from our entities, usually what happens is that the entity makes proposals to the minister on what amendments need to be made, and the department then publishes that, and thereafter we then take that through the process to Cabinet before it comes to Parliament. So we haven't received any amendments yet from the MRC, so we're waiting that. But having said that, as Professor Gray had said, we have a whole list of amendments to acts that are coming your way. And as you know, as leader of government business, we have to restrict the number that enter your control each year. So I'm not sure when exactly it will be coming to you.
thanks, Chair. If I can just add to that on the MRC Act. So over and above the amount of acts that has to be submitted to the department, we have identified and communicated to the department the what we call the quick wins, in other words, the changes that could be made to the Act without much contest. Those that are obviously either outdated or erroneous. We are currently now in the process of doing a consultation to identify areas where more contestation is possible in terms of the changes, and we're trying to formulate views on that before we can then engage the department to say how do we want to take those forward. And that's the process we are busy with. Once we've done that, we will then advise the department, then the department will proceed with the drafting as well as taking the bill through the process. So that's where we are on the Act. I think, Chair, through you, if I can just also address quickly, now that I'm on the floor, the other two questions that came my way. The other one is the issue of the IP or commercialization. We have a very robust regime that we utilize in engaging with our counterparties. We engage with the NIPMA office. We engage with the TTO Technology Transfer Office, and we also engage with the various institutional regimes where the counterparties are located. It's not always easy to negotiate. Like you said, sometimes funders will want to push their way, but I think, as the President has said, we do punch above our weight. We do negotiate robustly the IP regime that will be applicable to each and every of the projects or collaborations that we undertake or we collaborate on. So I would say we are pretty confident where we've given away any IP or commercialization right, we would have received something in return. And Chair, the last issue that those were the two, Chair. Those were the two. Thank you, Chair.
No, thank you. Thank you very much, Professor Green. We are asking some of these questions which may be very hard. Not because we don't appreciate the work that you do. We do. We are doing good work. We always support, and support at times doesn't come very nice. But in your last 2 years, if you can just do us a favor, I'm speaking on that. Please ensure that in your program, difficult as it may be, transformation doesn't start when people are at my age. Transformation starts at a very early age. Yes, you've got too much work, but if you are listening to the former Minister of Finance in terms of early childhood development, we're working to and say, I'm leaving and I've visited these primary schools, high schools, I've identified one or three children that have got a potential of being scientists working in the area of health sector. I think we will be comfortable because the challenge is that difficult as it may be, but that's the truth. Majority of the young people, in particular black, they are scientists that are on the streets, but the only thing is that there's no avenue. And as I was saying, there are health centers in our areas. And when I visited the health center in Utenik, and my worry was that when I visited there during the constituency time, is that it was very empty because the schools were closed. But health centers are not for learners only. They are also for adults who may have an interest. It's because our people are not, there is no simple way of understanding that science has got a potential of changing your life for the better. I will hammer on this. Worse in the health sphere. So we do think that you are doing very good. Please just, even if it's a 4 or 3 pager, a brief summary of the work that you are doing in the region and in Africa, so that we are able. Remember that we are public representatives. We do in our constituencies. We may ask some difficult questions, but we'll then be able to be assisted, because in my view, science cuts across all sectors of our lives. So we will always be there in congratulating you. We will always whip where we think it is necessary to. It's not about anything else. It's about wanting to ensure that as we are doing our work, we are being empowered. It's not that we don't empower ourselves, but these presentations, they do empower us. I think I'll always hammer on this. They do empower us as we move forward in ensuring that some of these things are then being done. We will visit. It's only that I missed the thing that the what the institution or the company or whatever that is there near Barra, which is development pathway. I don't know. In fact, if we can go on that, two of them are in Gauteng. They can then be able to go and see the good work that you say you are doing. We wouldn't know all the things unless we are there. So that's why my humble proposal is that just drop us, even if it's a 4-pager, we will appreciate that. And we want them to thank you very much for this presentation. And I know scientists, they don't believe in simplicity, Mr. Zaneko. Please try, and your research must, I once said that try for once your research to be reader friendly, so that people understand. You wouldn't see it now, but our generation is then being victims. We are victims of being excluded, not because of our own making, but we want our great children, our grandchildren, and our great grandchildren to be able to stand up and say, at a particular time, when our great great grandparents or grandparents were involved in the legislation of changing the social conditions of ourselves in the health sector, today we are what we are. We are what we are because of our own struggles. But we want our children to struggle, but not in a manner that is then really going to. So education in the sector is then going to be very important. Thank you very much. I think we'll have some other time and day to just have some, put you under one roof, STEPS SA, human yourself, the department, Department of Science and Technology, because we can't be working in silos. that's because, yeah, and that's what I'm picking up, that we're working in silos. It's about time that we're all under one roof so that we're then able to move. Thank you very much, Honorable Members. That was the last presentation. What we will do before, as they will be leaving, just 5 minutes of the time, Honorable Members, for some announcement. Thank you very much, Prof. Angel. Which is made dominated today. Thank you very much. That was only like a note. Please don't leave because I don't know. Oh, okay.
Yeah,
Dr. Maisel, please, there's an announcement that you want to make. We don't want anybody to miss it. It should be less than 5 minutes.
I think from the two minutes, I'm sure I can't see it. I think there's yet to go.
Okay. And are there any who supposed to get me a cleaner?
Come here.
We are... I think we have seen in our programs, Honorable Members, that came. The last presentation for tomorrow was going to be the Council for Medical Scheme. We have then added CCOG because Omthetho appreciates we had our day for the department, which then means that we are likely to finish more or less the same time or later than this. So I thought it's important that as you leave today, you are aware, you are not taken by surprise tomorrow that day is then going to be a presentation by CCOG. I do think that it was basically that, and so that we have a is there something, Mr. Meister? Oh.
So it's because there's a caucus, they say. It's not the understanding was that the whole day was for committees, but we've then since learned that they laid a caucus, so the morning part is not going to be available. So that's why we then felt this might necessarily pull this issue with the area.
Okay, no, thank you for that addition. I think, we have come to the end of today. I'm told, the transport arranged, so am I correct? Half past?
No.
We thought that, I'm sure they thought that we'll still be on by that time. Our apologies. Come again? No, can't. Well, are you going to try? Is it possible? Okay. But you will then indicate. All right. Thank you very much.